This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents Snitch. Written and performed by Olivia Gatwood. Well, what about a dog? Gianna tugged at the hem of her pencil skirt. I'm not interested in that, she said. If you're worried you'll never be able to care for another human being, and that's something you want to work on, a dog could be practice. Gianna's therapist, Joshua, was 5 years her junior. He looked like a bootleg Ken doll, his hair just a little too flat, eyes just a little too beady. Gianna deduced within their first 3 sessions that he would only be attractive if someone hacked away at the pudge around his jawline. His face was bottom heavy, like a tube sock filled with sand. I've killed 4 orchids, she said. Everyone kills orchids. They die from being watered. Isn't that ridiculous? How do you know that? My mother was a florist. Was? This isn't about me, Gianna. Bringing a dog home could be a wonderful way to learn what it might look like to care for another being, a baby, perhaps. And there are so many who need homes. You and the dog could help each other. Gianna looked at the couch to her left and fantasized about unzipping the back of her skirt and falling backwards onto the cushions, tossing her legs up onto the armrest. Would you like to move seats? She'd forgotten it was Joshua's job to watch her. Don't you think it's sort of archaic, the idea that women need to possess maternal qualities? Sure, if you're thinking about it based on what's expected of women, but we're here to talk about what it is that you need from your own life. We're here to talk about Gianna. She felt infantilized when he spoke about her in third person, but understood what he was trying to do. She could imagine, then, that Gianna was a girl outside of this room, and that she and Joshua were buddies, pathologizing a mutual friend. Did you grow up with pets? He continued. Gianna shook her head. Italians don't really do pets. What do you mean by that? We're too loud, chaotic. Really? You seem reserved to me. Well, sometimes you become what you came from, and sometimes you make a vow against it. Joshua smiled and nodded his head. He wasn't agreeing with her. Gianna knew this. He was proud of her for saying something about herself that was more emotional than it was logical. Let's explore that, he said, then set his notepad on the side table and crossed one leg over the other. Talk to me about what it means to make a vow. Gianna Costa never directly advised any of her clients to get a walker. But sometimes she said things like, "Are you feeling okay?" or "Maybe we should call for more assistance," while she helped them up the stairs that led into her office building, even if they weren't really struggling to climb them. More often than not, they showed up to the next meeting, hunched over a gray plastic frame, appearing 2 decades older and asking for the elevator. Something she learned in law school, or rather, something she learned from a professor after class, after all the students had left and she stayed behind to ask about an internship, was that optics often override all else in the courtroom. A dude in a starched white button-down with a tattooed face is more likely to win a case than the same guy in a tank top, the professor said. So it could only help the men if they looked fragile, especially with the contrast of Gianna walking next to them, shoulders pinned back beneath a black suit jacket, flaunting the toned calves she worked hard for, veiled in pantyhose. When she saw a paparazzi photo from her first high-profile gig, she sent it to her father with the subject line, "Are you proud of me, Daddy?" And he was. He responded, "My very own Ruth Bader Ginsburg." She took on her first major client by happenstance 3 years earlier. She'd gotten a job at a law firm known primarily for high-income divorce settlements. But when the CEO of a prominent record label was accused by a beloved pop star of groping her in the bathroom at a Grammys after party, and the only other woman at the firm was on maternity leave, the case was assigned to Gianna. She knew this wasn't about experience or talent. She was far less qualified than her colleagues. But everyone knows that if a man is accused of sexual assault and then hires a female lawyer, even a rookie, he is far more likely to win based on this fact alone. After the pop star came forward, three other women followed, all singers, with stories so similar it sounded like they'd been passed down through a game of telephone. The internet used this to prove that he was not only guilty, but a systematic, premeditating predator. But Gianna turned this on its head, using these almost identical narratives as proof that the girls had agreed on the details much earlier. The whole accusation was too choreographed. If a woman didn't have enough details, she was a bad liar. And if a woman had too many, she was a good one. If there was only one woman, there wasn't enough proof. If there were several, it was a witch hunt. And besides, how would a man hobbling in a walker, a man who could barely rise upon the judge's order without help from his woman attorney, attack not just one, but four women? Gianna made a name for herself as the go-to defense attorney for wealthy men who'd been slapped with a Me Too accusation and took on four more men after that, a director, a baseball player, a senator, and the dean of an Ivy League school. None of the cases resulted in prison time, and only two of them, the baseball player and the director, had to pay for a resolution. In the lobby of the courtroom after the baseball player's hearing, a journalist pushed a microphone towards her mouth and asked, "Do you really think it's that hard to get a wealthy white man off in a justice system that favors wealthy white men?" To which she responded, "It is when the person responsible for getting them off isn't a wealthy white man." A soundbite she was sure would become a pull quote in a Time magazine profile written about her one day. Gianna slipped off her shoes in the doorway of her quiet apartment. She imagined a dog, a small dog, running up to greet her. She tried to manufacture something joyous in her body, but the joy was covered in saran wrap, like tightly packaged meat from the grocery store, something she could see, could press her fingers into, but not actually feel. She could only think about how she might manage to keep her white carpet clean with an animal around. Gianna's favorite part of her apartment was the walk-in closet. Her first apartment in New York was a studio, barely large enough to fit a queen-sized mattress, a desk, and a clothing rack to hang her growing collection of business attire. Now, she lived on the Upper West Side and had bought the place furnished. She wasn't sentimental about interior design. She just wanted to come home to something. She organized her closet by shade, ranging from dusty pink, never brighter, lest you look like a flight attendant, to gray, never white, lest you look like a bride, to navy blue, never powder, lest you look like a secretary, to black. Gianna had always lived alone. She moved out at the age of 18 to attend NYU, where she applied for one of the highly sought-after single dorms and, by chance of a lottery system, got it. The thought of a roommate was repulsive. All of the forced bonding, the shared toiletries, the gamble that you'd get stuck with an evangelical Christian. She'd grown up an only child, and because her mother often worked doubles at the restaurant while her father sold home insurance from a call center, she spent most of her time alone. She took the school bus every day until the moment she could feasibly fight off a kidnapper with keychain mace, and then she walked. While she tended to her evening, boiling spinach and whisking a poached egg for dinner, taking a shower but only to shave her body, a plastic cap over her hair, and reading exactly 12 pages of a book, strictly historical fiction, while blowing on a mug of chamomile tea, she tried to imagine the little dog following her. She thought of it waiting to be fed while she served herself. She wondered where it would go while she bathed. Its potential presence seemed mostly annoying. It was only when she imagined it curled up against her hip in bed that the idea became somewhat appealing. It might be nice to feel something breathe, she thought. The next morning, she held up a heather gray tweed jacket and skirt against her body and looked in the mirror. She'd heard from a coworker that there were talks of a very big client having been referred to the firm after a public accusation. It would be her case, if they agreed to take it on. She'd learned to do her espresso dark hair by wrapping it around the barrel of a girthy curling iron in large chunks, then parting it down the middle and letting it fall loosely over her shoulders. She used to not wear a lot of makeup. She thought it would make people take her less seriously. But after the paparazzi started lurking in the bushes outside of her firm, she started powdering and contouring for the stage. She pulled the suit jacket and skirt away and looked at herself in her bra and underwear, black lace perfectly tailored to her breasts and hips. One day, she would let someone fuck her. She arrived at the office in a cab and ascended the stairs, briefcase in hand. A man, dressed like a dad on the sidelines of a children's soccer game, stepped out from the side of the walkway, trailing behind her with a long lens camera. "The Cut recently called you the woman who ruined it all. Gianna, can we get a line from you on that?" Gianna laughed and wrapped her manicured hand around the gold handle. "Go home, Kevin," she said, then disappeared inside. Before she even had the language to articulate it, Gianna Costa knew that being liked by women was about as valuable as being poor but in love. When her mother couldn't afford to buy her a real Tiffany bracelet before prom, she said, "Gee, you may not come from rich parents, but you come from a house wealthy with affection." Gianna rolled her eyes. She didn't want affection. She wanted the Tiffany bracelet. Even then, she always felt like she was playing emotional dress-up when she hung out with her girlfriends, sitting cross-legged on the bed at sleepovers, taking turns to cry and comfort. It wasn't until she became the manager of the boys' wrestling team and joined them on trips to meets, where she got to practice holding a clipboard and networking with college scouts, that she realized who actually had the opportunities. When girls like you, you get invited to birthday parties. When boys like you, you get invited to conferences. Just before lunch, her boss popped his head into her office and asked if he could come in. She motioned to the chair and adjusted her name plaque. "We got a call yesterday," he said. Her boss, Richard, was old enough to be her father, but always seemed timid in her presence. She hated the rim of white hair that surrounded the glowing, bulbous bald spot on the top of his head. "From Liam Wright's people. They want you." Gianna hadn't heard the name Liam Wright in at least 5 years, back when he would have been cast as the heartthrob older brother, not quite an A-lister, but invited to the parties because he looked good in photos, with a broad golden chest and dish plate white teeth. Now, he was the washed-up dad in teen movies, with an eye-roll-worthy sense of humor. His belly had distended beneath a band t-shirt, and while his hair was still as billowing and blonde as it was before, even movie makeup couldn't hide his tired face. His last film was a Christmas flop. But even before everyone in America knew Liam Wright's name, Gianna knew Liam Wright's name. First, as something her freshman year geometry teacher called out from an attendance list. She then matched the name to a sunny, toe-headed boy sitting in the corner, his feet propped up on an empty chair, somehow already having made an entire group of friends in their first week of high school. The last time she saw him in person, his name was being called at graduation, and the entire stadium erupted as though their favorite basketball player had just floated across the court and slammed a ball through the rim. She probably would have learned sooner that he'd gotten famous if she'd kept in touch with anyone they'd gone to school with. But she only learned a few years into college, when she went to the movies on a terrible date with a man whose name she didn't even remember, something like Kyle or Eric or Chris. She saw Liam in a trailer playing the role of a boy who falls in love with his deaf neighbor, then learns sign language before being killed in a car accident. She wasn't shocked to see him up there on the screen that night. He was the only athlete who was also in the school plays, where he was always cast as the lead and looked like a walking headshot. And she wasn't shocked now, hearing that someone had come forward about him either. Not because she thought he was capable of it, but because he was an easy target, approaching retirement and single, with tens of millions of dollars to his name. But something did strike her when she heard his name come out of Richard's mouth. When she left the world she was born into, she'd had no intention of looking back. But now, that world had walked directly into her office. Let's set up a time to talk then, she said. She didn't care enough about Richard to carry on the conversation further. I'll dial in Susie. She picked up the phone and pressed the button for the front desk. Susie, an early 20s receptionist whose revolving pairs of pleated dress pants and ballet flats made her look like a retail worker at the Gap, answered. Jenkins and Hugh, she said, helium high and anxious. Susie, you can look at the caller ID, Gianna snapped. I know where I work. Oh, Susie stuttered. Hi, Miss Costa. What can I do for you? I need to set up an appointment with Liam Wright's people. They called yesterday. Give them a call back and let them know they can come in tomorrow at some point. You've only got 2 p.m. open. Let's do 2 then, Gianna said. Have an intern pick me up a Kale Caesar before that. Okay, Miss Costa, she said, and Gianna hung up. She opened up her maroon leather planner and leafed to the date. You hear that? She said without looking up at Richard. She wrote Liam's name in the box for the next day. Tomorrow, Richard said. Let me know if I can have anything prepped for you. I'll be fine, she said. She looked up and gave him an exaggerated smile. He stood, as if on command, and walked towards the door. Our hero, he said. What would these boys do without you? Well, whatever they're doing, she put air quotes around the word. Let's hope it doesn't stop, otherwise I'm out of the job. Richard always laughed too hard at Gianna's jokes. It made her feel like they weren't actually funny. The next day, after shoving forkfuls of cream-coated kale into her mouth, Gianna gargled mouthwash and spit it into the trash can under her desk. She coated her hands in citrus lotion and popped open a compact, reapplying her coffee-colored lipstick. Liam had to come in through the back of the building. The accusation was public already, but they wanted to make sure the press didn't see him walking into this firm specifically and deduce that he'd signed on with Gianna, a decision that had not yet been made but could make headlines anyway. Susie called to let her know he'd arrived and would be at her office door within 5 minutes. It took him 10, which bothered her, but she was determined to greet him with warmth regardless, even if she had to bite down on her cheek before she did it. Liam, she said, putting out her hand. He bypassed it and came in to hug her, then held her out in front of him, his hands gripping each of her shoulders. Gianna Costa, he said, with the same wry tone a person would use if they ran into a former lover at the grocery store. He hadn't aged well. His face looked bloated in awkward places, at his temples and beneath his eyes, and she couldn't tell if it was from fillers or booze. He'd clearly spent too much time in tanning booths, and what was once a boy smiling in the sun, the kind of boy whom mothers insisted he call by their first name, was now a rust-colored man, sagging from the bone, his voice like tires backing out of a gravel driveway. It's been some time, she said, releasing herself from his grip and walking back to her chair. You can take a seat. The other thing Gianna had learned about men was that it wasn't actually about being liked. It was about being respected. That's what so many women got wrong. They thought that doing what the men told them to was what would grant them acceptance. No. The men, whether they knew it or not, were testing you. If Gianna were to melt into Liam's arms, squeeze him back, flutter into reminiscing about the good old days, what a catch he was, giggle and blush when he told her he always had a little crush on her. He would no longer trust her to remain poker-faced and unshakable in a courtroom. The way you get a man to respect you, a man who, let's be honest, probably didn't interact with many women he wasn't fucking or trying to fuck, was by pointing to a chair, telling him to sit, and waiting for him to notice your name plaque before you began speaking. Let's talk, Gianna said. She crossed one leg over the other, then wove her fingers over her kneecap. Liam ran both of his hands through his bleached hair. Before I get into my shit, he said, how have you been? How long has it been? Since graduation? What year was that? 1990? Gianna nodded. Class of 90, she said. Gianna didn't want to talk about high school. The more they focused on the fact that they'd previously known each other, the less likely it was that she would be allowed to sign him on as a client. It was widely known in the legal world that it's malpractice to take on a friend, a lover, a family member. And though Liam was none of these things, she could tell he thought the approach would be to become one, that that would make her feel closer to him and therefore make him an easier person to defend. "What a time," he said. "You know, I'm not surprised you turned out to be such a big shot. I remember you were always running around with that little tape recorder for the school newspaper. And who was your friend again? Carol? Karen? That little redhead who twirled the flags?" "Catherine," Gianna said. "How's she? Do you guys still keep in touch?" "Liam, look." Gianna unfolded her legs and leaned forward. "In this office, we don't have a past. We went to high school together by sheer coincidence, but we did not know each other. That's not a lie, so let's not make it look like one. If you want me to take on your case, I need to know about the case. I need to know about your relationship to the woman making these claims, and then I need to do my work. But anything outside of that is going to do nothing but fuel the press and make me look like a bad lawyer. The only thing I want less than you going to jail is for me to look like a bad lawyer. Does that make sense?" Liam made a signal of surrender, putting his hands up. "My manager's in the lobby," he said. "I told him he could wait out there since we're familiar, but should I go grab him?" Gianna was relieved to see that Liam had started asking permission for things. "No," she said. "We can talk just us. Now tell me what happened." Liam put his hands behind his head, and Gianna was surprised to see that he had all right biceps bulging beneath the sleeves of his black t-shirt. He picked up his foot and rested his ankle on his knee. He was wearing Gucci sneakers that looked like the Italian flag, and no socks. "It was last week. I figured you'd heard about it already, but I guess you didn't." "I stay away from the news," Gianna said. "I don't trust journalists." "Weren't you a journalist?" "That's why I know not to trust them. Do you mind if I take notes?" "Do you have a shredder?" "I've got a lock on my desk and no key copy." Gianna pulled out a notepad and scribbled the date. Liam continued. "So last week, Tuesday, I think at like 9 a.m, I wake up. I usually don't check my phone first thing. It's a practice my therapist and I are working on. But the thing won't stop going off. So I check it, and there's like 52 missed calls from my publicist and texts from everyone I know. I figure someone's died, right? Or that I was nominated for Sexiest Man Alive." He pauses for Gianna to giggle, but she doesn't reward him with it. She waits. "I don't know," he continues. "But then I see what they're all sending me, a link to a Twitter thread where some woman is saying that I raped her at a party in high school." He bunny-eared his fingers to put invisible quotes around the words raped and party. Gianna felt a jolt in her stomach. She cleared her throat to kill it. "Okay," she said, "that's libel, she's careless, keep going." "And so I'm like, high school? Who even remembers high school? Since when are we being punished for shit we did as teenagers? I always thought high school was a sort of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas situation." "So you do know what incident she's talking about?" "No, not at all. I go click on the girl's page, the woman's page, and it's Judit Simcoe, that Hungarian girl." Gianna felt the sensation on her tongue first, like a dentist had stuck the small vacuum into her mouth and sucked out all of her spit. Liam kept talking about tweets, how Judit claimed she woke up and saw Liam hunched over her body, then felt him inside it and tried to move but couldn't. His hands were holding down her wrists and the rest of his weight pinned her to the bed. He talked about how Judit claimed to remember him smiling, how he felt like the detail was obnoxious, that she might as well just go and write some fucking horror flick. She wanted to pull out her compact mirror and slap herself on the cheek. "Get it together, Gianna." But all she could do was stare at the college-ruled paper in front of her and try to make out what she'd already written down. She looked up at Liam, who was still going. He wasn't looking at her. He wasn't looking at anything. He was looking backwards, into the past, into the party, into the house of the kid whose mom always let them drink, into the living room where someone put on Public Enemy and lit a cigarette inside. Gianna remembered, because Gianna was there too. Everyone in their grade was invited because it was a pre-summer party, a universal, unexclusive affair, celebrating the completion of their second year of high school. Otherwise, Gianna wouldn't have gone. She knew what people thought of her. A narc, a stuck-up fink, little cunt. It was the girls who said these things about her. The boys on the wrestling team liked her because she washed their uniforms and gave them Pedialyte. If only the girls knew that she never once told the coach how many of the boys threw up their lunches just to make weight, they would never call her a snitch. But she knew why the reputation stuck. She ran the newspaper and was known for publishing controversial stories that aired on the side of the administration. Kids figuring out how to steal from vending machines, the percentage of low-income students versus the percentage of students taking advantage of free lunches, and her most infamous, an exposé on a popular method of cheating, writing the answers on a piece of paper folded neatly into the battery pocket of a calculator. But in her mind, she wasn't telling on anyone. She was a reporter. She went to the party with Catherine and borrowed a pair of high-rise Levi's and a floral tank top that Catherine made her tie in a knot at the bottom to expose her waist. They backcombed their hair so it was tall and frizzy. Gianna felt like Aunt Becky, and Aunt Becky was stupid. But admittedly, a part of her was giddy to be in a room like the ones she'd seen on television, where teenagers touched one another in the dark and drank red punch from the same bowl, even though she scoffed at them. The house wasn't far from Catherine's, so they walked, but slowly, careful not to dirty their white keds. "Do you think you'll kiss someone?" Catherine said. She was gripping Gianna's arm. Gianna couldn't stand how much Catherine looked forward to romance. The only goal she had was a white dress. "Ew," Gianna said. "I wouldn't waste my mouth on anyone at this school." "You don't want to do it before college?" "It's not like I'm saving myself for God or whatever," she said. "I just don't want to do it with someone whose IQ is 50 points lower than mine." Catherine sighed. She did this whenever Gianna made her feel stupid for being excited. Gianna didn't care. Catherine needed to learn eventually that there were bigger obstacles to overcome than figuring out who to let stick their tongue down your throat before you turn 18. "I hope my first kiss is with Liam Wright," Catherine said quietly. "Then you'll need to get to the back of the line." The house thumped, and teenagers tumbled out into the front yard, collapsing on the lawn, scream laughing at the dark sky. Inside, the light was purple and pulsing. It looked how Gianna felt on the inside, like a mass of bodies were grinding against one another in her stomach. It was only a few minutes before she lost sight of Catherine, who, while not considered popular, had other friends and a desire to make more. Gianna wedged her way through the familiar, glassy-eyed piers to the kitchen, where bottles collected on the island like glass soldiers standing at attention. She picked one up and looked at the label. Vodka, the kind her mother drank on Saturdays while watching tennis. She pulled a styrofoam cup from a plastic bag and eyeballed a shot, then filled the rest from a liter of generic cola. She took a sip and winced. At the very least, the drink was an accessory to prevent being offered a drink. She wandered around the party, observing her classmates revert into toddlers, splayed out on couches, wiggling their bodies, climbing onto chairs. She imagined that there was no music or booze or smoke and laughed at the image of people acting this stupid with nothing to induce them. They were late and everyone was already trashed. Gianna was bored. Every time she tried to start a conversation, the person was either too drunk to maintain focus or just drunk enough that they tried to hug her. So she found herself walking through each room and back again, trying to look busy. She'd gotten her taste of a high school party, and now she understood without a doubt that it was an activity for morons. Finally, after meandering through the living room, dining room, kitchen, and backyard, so many times that she'd memorized the family portraits on the wall and deduced which child was the favorite based on how many photos of each were hung, she decided to walk upstairs. When she reached the top of the staircase, no one was there. She hadn't seen a sign saying that it was an off-limits area, but maybe everyone understood this etiquette except her. It was nice, the silence. The thumping house felt like an afterthought beneath her feet. All of the lights were off and she needed to pee. So she walked down the long dark hallway, trailing the tips of her fingers against the wall to guide her. At the end of the hall, a door was cracked open. She walked towards it, and heard the sound of someone panting, then a faint grunt and more panting. She pushed the door open gently so that she could see through the gap and saw the silhouette of a boy thrusting against a person on the bed. Gianna couldn't make out the body beneath him, but she could see the leg, limp and hanging off the edge. She watched for a moment, then heard a girl's voice, disoriented and coming to life. "What are you doing?" She recognized the accent immediately. It was the new girl who had immigrated from Hungary earlier that year, who barely spoke English and towered over most of the boys, whose hair was so blonde it looked white at the roots and hung straight and blunt down her back. "Stop," Judit mumbled. "Please stop." But the boy kept going, with more vigor each time she spoke. As she seemed to gain consciousness, her voice gained traction. Finally, she was able to yell, but was abruptly cut off and muffled. "Shut the fuck up," the boy hissed, then grunted again. "I'm almost finished." Judit whimpered each time he thrust himself forward, and then he moaned, collapsing on top of her before pulling back and standing. Gianna still couldn't make out who he was, only that he had the height and body of an athlete and seemed significantly less drunk than the people downstairs who were barely able to stand. She flinched and hurried into the bathroom next to her. She pressed her back against the wall and closed the door as much as she could without clicking it into place until she heard the door to the bedroom open and a pair of footsteps run down the hall. When they were gone, she walked back out and looked into the bedroom. She could hear Judit crying softly, her body still motionless on the bed. She debated saying her name, walking over to her. But what then? She didn't want to be responsible for a pantsless drunk girl crying at a party. She wanted to go home. "Hello?" Judit said, raising her head from the pillow and looking in Gianna's direction. "Who is that?" She could hear a panic rising in her voice. Gianna whipped around and ran, descending the stairs and pushing through the bodies in the living room, plunging out into the cool air. She'd never been athletic, but now her feet carried her with an instinctual precision. She wasn't even sure how she was doing it, how her body knew to press the ball of the foot and launch her forward, then switch, both feet in the air for a second, before landing again. She ran through the back streets until she was catapulted onto the main road, which was quiet, the dim streetlights humming. From there, it was a straight shot to her house, about 3/4 of a mile, up 2 hills. At the base of the second hill, she was wheezing and slowed to walk. She pressed her finger into her side to mute a cramp. If someone had asked her, right then, what it was she'd witnessed, she would have said sex. She'd seen two people having sex, but there was an intangible detail about this that made it different from the sex she'd seen on television. It was something beyond the words she knew. If she'd had to name it, though, she would have called it Judit's limp foot. So every time I go look at this tweet, it's got thousands more likes and favorites and shares, whatever they're called. Liam's neck had flushed to an anxious pink. And the comments, Jesus, the comments. Women saying they always had a weird feeling about me, always thought I was a creep. His voice trips into an octave higher for a moment, then returns to normal. How am I just hearing about this? I mean, I'm over here thinking about every woman I've ever taken home, racking my brain trying to remember if I asked. But then I realize they were always the ones begging me. What business do I have fucking a girl who isn't even awake? And then come the other ones, the ones who say I put my hand too low on their back during a photo op, the ones who say they met me once and I offered them a role in exchange for a blowjob, as if I'm gonna cast a subpar actress and ruin a movie in exchange for that. Gianna felt like she'd been up all night, exhausted and dizzy, her temples twisting themselves into small knots. Liam's voice had gotten louder every time a new thought came to him, and his tone was shifting between anger and manic hilarity. Then, finally, it plummeted down to an almost whisper. "Look, Gianna," he said. "I need help. I think this has the potential to be really, really bad. You remember me, right? I'm not that guy. I had girlfriends and prom dates and good grades. I'm not a rapist. Anyone who knows me knows that. And you know me. Don't you know me? Of course, it had occurred to her before that her clients were guilty. But the law isn't about what happened. It's about who has the best argument. And most importantly, she believed that if women didn't want to be treated like objects, they shouldn't present themselves that way. If women didn't want to be thrown around like a rag doll, they shouldn't get so drunk that they forget how to move their own limbs. And more than anything, she believed that the phrase, "believe women," was about as nuanced as a live, laugh, love poster on a housewife's wall. But right now, the brain she so frequently relied on for logic had leaked out of her ears. She had no beliefs at all. She was just a body filled with water, and she wanted to cut herself open and flood the room. Liam was still talking, begging for her to call him familiar. "Liam," she said. Her voice was rough. She felt like she hadn't heard herself speak in days. "Liam, I need you to stop." "Oh, okay," he said. "Did you get all that? I mean, I could write it down if you want. I could record it even and send it to you. I know it's long. I can also have my manager forward you the tweets." Gianna put up her hand to silence him. She was silent, her eyes closed. Leading up to speech and debate competitions in high school, Gianna refused to speak to anyone for an entire day. It was a gamble to interact with other people before taking the stand. People who could throw you off just by making a comment that flung itself into your brain and banged around like a ball in a racquetball court. She didn't usually have this problem with her cases because she felt objective towards her clients. She was impenetrable. But somehow, Liam had served the ball and slammed it into the chamber. "I'm afraid we just know too many of the same people," Gianna said. "If it comes out that we went to school together, which we did, you won't be the only one whose personal life is put on the chopping block. It'll be me too. Our classmates will have a field day." Liam began to stutter. "I don't know about all that. I mean, will they even remember you? No offense, Gianna, but it's not like you were a star athlete or something." Gianna wanted to lean across her desk and hit him in the face with her framed degree. "Trust me, Liam, I am not the best person for this job." "But you got all those guys off," Liam said. "You're the best." "I'm not the best person for this job," she repeated. She stood up and he echoed the action. Then she ushered him to the door. "I can have Susie send you over some references, some other lawyers that I think do great work." Liam walked out into the hall and turned around. "You're not gonna like," he paused, "say anything, right? To the press?" "Liam." Gianna had gathered herself. She'd taken whatever was about to swallow her, crumpled it in her hands, and shoved it to the bottom of the waste bin. "The reason I'm not working with you is because I'm a professional, and because I fucking hate the press." Liam's face relaxed. "Well, it was good to see you, Gianna." Gianna smiled and closed the door. When the latch clicked into place, the thing she thought she'd crushed inside her bloomed back into her body and took over again. She slid down to the floor, buried her face in her knees, and bit down on her fist. Days after his visit, every tabloid had his face on it, alongside some kitschy headline: "Liam Party Boy Writes Dead Career Just Got Deader." Since Gianna hadn't taken the case, every high-profile lawyer in town was vying for it. His name was in everyone's mouth. And Judit had risen to her own kind of fame. 16,000 Twitter followers, a portrait with her arms crossed on the front page of the New York Times. Meet the New Jersey elementary school teacher taking down Liam Wright. Gianna went home during her lunch break and paced her living room for half an hour. Finally, she sat down at her dining room table and pulled out her planner. She flipped to the notes section and began making a list. It was an exercise she and Joshua had practiced early on, when she explained she often couldn't pinpoint what she was feeling and instead opted to bury it. Every emotion she could think of, she wrote down: angry, guilty, confused, sad, jealous, scared, embarrassed. Nothing else came to mind. She went through each one and referred back to times she'd felt that way, thinking it might help her name whatever lived in her body now. Angry, when an ex-boyfriend said he believed in universal health care. Guilty, when she stole $5 from her mother's work apron. Confused, when the same ex-boyfriend said he believed in prison abolition. Sad, when her father got laid off and she heard him crying in the bathroom. Jealous, when the only other woman in her focus group in law school got offered a position before her. Scared, the first time she saw Carrie. Embarrassed, when she saw a photo of herself in the newspaper and the reporter called her makeup-free and natural. The feeling lived nowhere. It had no name. It felt like a full-body itch, the kind that settles just under the skin, and when you think you've found it and dig your nails right into the spot, it crawls to a different limb. Gianna had seen the sign for the Humane Association several times. It was next door to the grocery store where she bought her supplements. What she had previously cherished as free time was now time devoted to thinking about Liam and Judith. The responsibilities of caring for a dog now seemed like a welcome distraction, a way to fill her evenings. Lately, she'd been hammering against the elliptical until she had sea legs and could barely climb off the machine. But this only took up 2 hours of her time at most. She prided herself on being a person who never felt lonely, because she prided herself on being a person who never needed anyone else. Now she wanted so badly to have a group of clucking girlfriends, if only to mute her own thoughts. A dog, it seemed, was the next best option. She pulled into the parking lot and smoothed out the front of her blazer before walking into the unkempt building. Inside, a woman sat at a desk decorated with hand-developed photos of smiling mutts, their onomatopoeic names in felt, glued to the frame. Gianna winced at the smell of pet. "Hi there," the woman said, in a voice so kind it made Gianna want to spit. Gianna realized then that she didn't know how to place an order for a dog. "Are we looking for a fur baby today?" "A dog," Gianna said. She feigned a smile. "Well, you can take a walk through those doors, where you'll find the pups that are available for adoption. Please don't stick your hand in the cages. If you're interested in visiting one, just let me know." Gianna nodded, considered apologizing for something, she wasn't sure what, then walked into the kennel. As soon as she entered the saloon-style doors, she covered her ears. The barks echoed off the cement walls and floors. In front of her was a long gray hallway lined with cages. As she walked, she realized it was only a few dogs that were making all the noise. The rest sat quietly in their cages, depressed and sleeping in sagging beds. Most of the dogs were pit bulls, muscled and sulking behind the wire. There were a few yappy little things, baring their teeth at Gianna when she passed. She hated all of them. She couldn't imagine bringing a single one home. She got to the end of the line and turned around. The door looked so far away. To her left, a small white dog was curled with its back against the gate, facing the wall away from her. It was the only dog that seemed unaffected by her presence. She kneeled down and put her first 2 fingers through one of the diamond-shaped wire slots and felt its fur. It was wiry, and beneath it, she could see pink skin. The dog, upon feeling her touch, lifted its head slowly and turned to look at her, its eyes like 2 black marbles, a patchy snout, fishing line whiskers. "Hi," Gianna said. The dog blinked, then returned its head to rest on the floor. She stood and looked at the name tag. Bolin. There was no description. Some of the other dogs had personality traits listed. Curious, playful, athletic. Just a note that interested parties should check in with the front desk. She walked back into the lobby and the receptionist perked up. "Anyone you like?" Gianna thought to remind her that they were talking about dogs. A word like "anyone" wasn't applicable here. "Bolin," she said. The woman raised her eyebrows and placed her pen between her teeth, then typed something on her keyboard. "Oh, we don't have many people asking about her," she said. "Let's see." Gianna waited while the woman scanned the screen. She felt embarrassed to be here, like the staff of a prank show might burst in, carrying cameras on their shoulders any minute, shoving the lenses into her face. "I'll be honest with you, it looks like we've had some issues with Bo. She's been returned 3 times, always by families who we liked and trusted, but who had issues with her attitude. She's been known to snap for reasons we can't quite place yet, but it looks like the trainers have run some tests and are attributing it to a general need for a lot of space. She's very unaffected until she isn't, not good with kids or other dogs, would probably do okay with a cat or an animal that's equally disinterested in her, but definitely needs an owner who isn't looking for a best friend." Gianna wanted to laugh out loud. That poor dog, seen as having problems, but really just having boundaries while everyone else has a savior complex. "I'd like to visit with her." The woman took Gianna to a small windowless room with a single chair, then left briefly and returned with Bolin on a leash. Bolin didn't need to be on a leash. Gianna could see this. It was completely slack, and her collar sat loose around her neck. She looked exhausted, like she'd been woken up an hour before her alarm. When the woman unhooked her, Bolin walked to the corner of the room and lay down, resting her chin flat on the floor, her paws on either side of her snout. Her eyes were open, focused on the ceiling. Gianna sat in silence, her hands folded in her lap. The woman watched Gianna. She cleared her throat. "Have you ever had a dog before?" "Not quite," Gianna said. "Well, she does know her name," the woman said. "You can call her if you'd like to see how she responds." She reached into a small fanny pack around her waist and pulled out a palmful of kibble. "You can give these to her, too." She held them out to Gianna. Gianna could see the oily film beneath the food on the woman's hand and waved it away. "It's important that you get a sense of the dog's temperament so you can see if it fits into your lifestyle. I think her temperament is pretty clear. If anything, offering food would give me a false understanding of who she is. In that case, she's being bribed." "Dogs are very food motivated," the woman said. Gianna ignored the woman and watched Bolin, who seemed unimpressed by the whole ordeal. "Bolin," Gianna said, her voice calm and direct, as though she were calling to a friend in the next stall of a public bathroom asking for toilet paper. Bolin's eyes were closed now, but Gianna sensed she wasn't sleeping. She was just waiting for the time to pass. Gianna knew this feeling. "Bolin," she said again, louder, and Bolin opened her eyes, looking directly at Gianna. Gianna felt herself flinch. They stared at each other, neither of them blinking. It was always dogs that performed tricks that got billed as intelligent, but the silent ones clearly felt they didn't have anything to prove, which in and of itself was a smarter approach in Gianna's mind. Bolin was smart, and no one but Gianna was going to see that. After an hour of what the woman claimed was mandatory paperwork and questions, but seemed more like interrogation, Gianna was walking Bolin out the door. She opened the rear door to her car, and Bolin stood beneath it. "Up," Gianna said. "Come on, up." But Bolin just stared back. Finally, Gianna wrapped her hand around Bolin's belly and lifted her up onto the seat. She closed the door and walked around to the driver's side, then climbed inside and shut the door behind her. Had she not known a dog was in the car, there would have been no difference. Bolin was silent, not even a pant. Gianna turned around to look at her. "Well, you're welcome," she said. Bolin yawned. "I saved you from that chipper bitch." Even though Bolin had very few needs, it was enough to keep Gianna distracted. She scanned the pet store aisles for food, but was repulsed by the selection, all of it flaunting gourmet ingredients, but still serving it in the form of dry brown pellets. How could someone claim to be a dog person, but feed their dog the exact same thing morning and night? She researched what kinds of meats and vegetables were suitable for a small, old dog like Bolin, and settled on a recipe of carrots, squash, chicken hearts, and vegetable broth thrown into a food processor and poured over rice. She did purchase treats, green bones that were supposed to double as teeth cleaners, and Bolin enjoyed chewing on them during the day. Yes, she cooked Bolin what some might call extravagant dinners and purchased the most expensive quilted dog bed she could find online, but she felt it was more for her own dignity than out of some maternal affection or desire to curate a nice experience for an animal. If she was going to have a pet, she wanted the pet to be an extension of herself, and Gianna would never eat kibble from a bag. On a Sunday, she walked Bolin to a patio down the street from her apartment, an Italian cafe where she often enjoyed brown butter sage pasta and a vodka soda in the evening. It was the first time she'd be seen in public with a dog, and she was already resentful of the attention it would bring. Sure enough, people stopped every few minutes to kneel down and pet Bolin without asking, which pleased neither Gianna nor Bolin, both of whom stood there, waiting for it to be over. Finally, after the fourth 20-something girl cooed and reached for Bolin's face, Gianna said she wasn't friendly and yanked her away. They settled on a spot in the corner against the wall. She looped Bolin's leash around the leg of her chair, like she'd seen other dog owners do, and ordered what she usually did, as well as a small bowl of bread and an extra cup of water. She twirled no more than 3 pieces of pasta around the end of her fork at a time, the perfect amount for an unobnoxious mouthful, trying to think of anything other than Liam. Ever since he'd visited her in the office, her mind constantly swerved towards him without her consent, and it wasn't until she pulled herself out of the thought spiral that she realized she was back there in the first place. It took so much effort to stay away from the image of Judith's limp foot in a dark room and Liam's blushing neck in the chair across from her desk that sometimes she'd submit to it just to get it over with. The woman who defended rapists, plagued with guilt after realizing what she'd witnessed, a headline she imagined in the court of public opinion. Everyone was always looking for the redemption story, which, to Gianna, seemed like a symptom of an inability to hold complexities. The reality was that, in her other cases, Gianna cared very little about what had actually happened. She cared about presenting what she was told were facts in a calculated manner. She relied heavily on receiving information from her client at face value, and because she knew nothing else, she was able to organize this information with little judgment and complete strategy. The memory of Judith made it so the hand that guided Liam's story was not just Liam's, but young Gianna's too. The Gianna who heard Judith say no. Gianna's chair jerked forward and her water glass tipped off the table, crashing next to her foot. Bolin had lunged forward, jerking Gianna back to the present. The voice of a young child shrieked and Bolin barked, something Gianna hadn't heard before. It was deeper than she'd imagined. More like a hound. Gianna turned and saw a small girl, no older than 10, gripping her forearm and screaming. Blood seeped out from beneath her fingers, and when she removed her hand, bits of skin flapped open like gills. When the girl looked down at her arm, she screamed louder. Her father was already kneeling next to her, unwrapping the scarf from around his neck and dressing her wound. Gianna reached down and picked up Bolin, taking her into her lap. She could feel the muted growl simmering beneath her chest. The father looked up at Gianna, who was staring at the young girl. "Why would you bring that dog in public?" he yelled. Gianna could feel everyone around them staring. "I tried to pet it," the young girl hiccuped. "I just wanted to pet it." "I know, honey," the man said. He secured the scarf into a knot around her forearm, then directed his attention back to Gianna. "Are you going to say something?" "I'm sorry," Gianna said, but her voice was hollow. "Maybe you should teach your child not to touch people without asking." "This is a dog," the man said. His voice was growing angrier. "You have a dog sitting on a patio. People are going to want to touch it." "So it's my fault that your child assumed my dog wanted to be touched?" You don't just bring dangerous animals out in public, he said. She pulled Bolin in towards her chest and stood. Does it have vaccines at least? He said. We'll need to exchange information. I'm assuming she'll need stitches. The girl's cries had devolved into a steady whimper. She has vaccines, yes, Gianna said. This isn't the third world. Your kid isn't going to get rabies. Do you hear yourself? The man said. My daughter is bleeding. Gianna shrugged. You're acting as though she deserves it. There's a difference between deserving something and learning it the hard way, Gianna said. She reached down and picked her purse up off the table, looping it through her arm and over her shoulder. She could tell the man thought she was standing to come closer, but instead, she walked past them, turning out of the gate towards her apartment building. The man called to her, and when she felt as though his voice was growing closer, she started to run. She burst through the doors of her building, panting, and her doorman jerked back. She shielded Bolin's face and scurried to the elevator, where she held the dog at eye level, her legs hanging down like a skinned rabbit, and inspected her mouth for blood. Gianna knew that scolding Bolin for something she likely did not even remember at this point, something she'd done out of animalistic instinct, with very little, if any, premeditated thought, was useless. She knew what they did to dogs that bit people, especially a dog like Bolin, one that very few people would deem worth keeping. She washed her in the bathtub, which Bolin endured with her usual apathy until the warm water stopped, at which point Gianna wrapped her trembling body in a towel. There was no blood in the dog's mouth, but Gianna still brushed her teeth and fed her one of the green bones. Then Gianna bathed too. Her hair still wet and wrapped in a tight, terry cloth turban, she sat down at the computer. Now, she needed to distract herself from the image of the child's bloody arm, the realization that she could never return to her favorite restaurant and would likely have to start walking a new route altogether. And as always, when her brain moved away from Bolin, it focused on Judit. But this time, Gianna welcomed it. She typed Judit and Liam's full names into the search bar. It was all the familiar headlines, but with an update. She clicked on the first result. Despite the incident allegedly having taken place in a crowded home, where dozens and dozens of teenagers watched one another like hawks, not a single person had witnessed Judit and Liam interact. Former classmates who remembered being there came forward to say they saw Judit that night, but nowhere near Liam, and they saw Liam, but were fairly certain he didn't even know who Judit was. One person recalled the staircase being in the center of the living room, in full view. It would have been noticeable had two people walked up or down it, they said. There was no longer a question about whether or not it happened. There were no more questions. If it had happened, it was impossible that not a single person had witnessed it. Gianna leaned back in her chair and looked at Bolin, who was sitting in her bed, staring at her. Don't tell anyone, she said. Bolin was silent. Bolin was always silent. That's what Gianna liked best about her. It felt like she was always saying yes. This has been an Audible original, produced by Audible Originals, written and performed by Olivia Gatwood. Executive producers, Lara Blackman and Thomas Mann. Directed by Thomas Mann. Acquisition and development, Joanne Peretz. Vice President of Audible Studios, Mike Charzuk. Editor-in-Chief, Audible Original Publishing, David Blum. Copyright 2020 by Olivia Gatwood. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.